see. As we announce the handouts for this class, you can find those on the website. We'll try to have some hard copies each time for people who come in who may not have had a chance to download the questions or notes beforehand. And I'm kind of watching. Diane was going to make some extra copies, and when they come in, I'll ask for a show of hands of who might need those, and we'll try to get those distributed. But they're not here yet, so we're going to go ahead and get started. We're finishing up actually our second lesson. Really, this is the second half of the second lesson, since this is the first time I've done this series, I haven't always divided it in the best place. So this should really be, instead of the middle of lesson two, this is the beginning of lesson three. For those of you, we're doing this on Sunday and Wednesday, and so we'll meet Wednesday, then we'll be off for a week because of the gospel meeting, and then we'll have our last two classes, the Sunday and Wednesday after the gospel meeting. But Wednesday evening we talked about children being a blessing from the Lord, Psalm 127 and verse 3, and the fact that as a gift from the Lord, we ought to see them as gifts. Sometimes parents see children as a burden instead of as a blessing, and that's certainly the wrong way to see children. Particularly when people have children before they're ready to have children, it's certainly a challenge, but it's always a blessing, and children need to know that they are appreciated and loved. And yet, at the same time, though, too, we need to be careful that we don't make idols of our children, that we realize as a blessing from the Lord that we need to be thankful to the giver of the gift, and we need to worship the giver of the gift, not the gift. And so that if we worship what the giver has given, that's just idolatry is all it is. And so if we put our children before God, if we think that finding meaning in life is all about being a parent instead of about being a child of God, then we've got misplaced priorities. And we don't understand the way God designed us and the relationship that He desires with us, or the relationship that He tends for us to have in the family and the purpose of the family. It's not meant for our ultimate fulfillment. That's found in a relationship with God. That said, family is a great blessing, one that we're to be thankful for and certainly should enjoy as a foretaste of heaven. But it's not heaven. We concluded Wednesday night. I know some of you teach class on Wednesday and so are missing every other lesson, and we're trying to record these as well. But we talked about the fact that God has blessed every children individually. Each one has their own identity. Our children are not us. They are not extensions of us. And so they weren't created for our purposes and our dreams, but for God's purposes and God's plans. And that as parents, their purpose isn't for us to have a second chance at life or to live vicariously through them, but rather to help them discover the gifts that God has given them and the purposes that God has for them, and to be useful to God rather than something to bolster our ego. And when we look at Proverbs chapter 22 and verse 6 in that light, when we talk about training up a child in the way that he should go, rather than, that may not be the way we would want him to go. We might want him to be a doctor or a lawyer. And he's determined to be a mechanic. Nothing wrong with being a mechanic. Might not be our aspiration for him, but that's a good aspiration. There are a lot of times when I wish I were a better mechanic than I am. Let me see. We began talking about parental roles, and we were talking about the parent as a provider. We'll finish that up today, and then talk about the parent as a teacher. May or may not finish that today, but then we'll be getting to the thing that usually everybody jumps to when you talk about parenting. Everybody thinks, "Oh, we're going to talk about discipline," and that's an important part of it. But that's like the roof. That's the last thing you put up. The foundation comes before the roof. And so before we get to that, there are certain principles that we need to have in place. And that's hopefully the ground that we're covering in these first few lessons. When we think about the parent as provider, 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 8, a very familiar passage, we're told that if one doesn't provide for his own, he's worse than an unbeliever. We have an obligation to provide for our children. In fact, even those who are not religious recognize that parents in particular, adults in general, have obligations toward children, that if we neglect or endanger children, we can be prosecuted by the law. That, you know, it's reprehensible to think of someone who would leave an innocent, helpless child without protection, without providing for their safety. That happens. Fortunately, it doesn't happen as often as another danger that we need to really be careful about. One that in some ways can be just as dangerous to children, and that is overindulgence. We oftentimes talk about neglect and abuse, and we don't talk about overindulgence. But overindulgence can be just as harmful to children. And I suspect for most parents, that's probably the greatest challenge. Is, you know, we love our children, we want to do things for them, with them, and so we just give them too much. But we notice in Proverbs chapter 25 and verse 16 that in fact, you can't have too much of a good thing. If you don't have copies of this lesson too, if you raise your hand, we'll get those passed out. The other handout I'll just stick on the back table, we'll get to later. But you always think about, it's helpful to think about God as the perfect Father. And think about, well, what did God do as a father? When it was time to bring the children out of Egypt, did he load them onto air-conditioned buses and feed them lots of food on the way to the promised land? It took a while to get there. And there were times when there was hunger and thirst and challenge and difficulty. But, God certainly could have done something different. He's all-powerful. He could have made it easy. But Deuteronomy chapter 8 tells us that by design, for their good, and in fact, that's Deuteronomy chapter 6 and verse 24, we're told about God's laws are for our good always. They're not for God's benefit. They're for our benefit. And so we want to follow that example. We were talking about not only physical needs, providing for, but being careful not to over-provide.
Everybody's supposed to get this.
Let's just put that on the table at the end. They can pick that one up. That'll emotional needs. And I guess if there is one thing in this whole study of all the lessons, the thing that I would emphasize, the one takeaway I hope everybody gets, is that children's emotional needs are their greatest need. Whether children eat steak or bologna doesn't make that much of a difference. Whether they have meat every day or beans and cornbread doesn't make a big difference. But whether their emotional needs are met or not makes a huge difference. I work in a prison. Most of the people I work with are there because their emotional needs weren't met. They're very immature, very childish, because they never developed in an emotional way. I mean, physically, some of them are huge, but emotionally, a lot of them are children.
But in Gilmore, don't you think their intellectual needs were disregarded too?
Some are. Some are behind academically, but some are very intelligent. Like I say, the biggest thing I see is that, as an educator, what I've seen, I've worked with a lot of kids through the years, through the decades, and I can't tell you how many attention-starved kids I've worked with. Kids, a lot of times, are just starved for attention. And if you're around children very much, you'll know that, they need food and water and clothes, but what they really desire more than anything is attention. And I look around this room and I just can't help but thinking about a lot of our college students and how much I appreciate the attention that you give to our little people. You know, they want attention, not only from their parents, but from, you know, you college students and others. And you all do a great job of listening to them, talking to them, giving them attention. Dick? Yeah, and sometimes as parents, you know, we get so focused on providing for the physical things that, you know, we're so busy working and making money and trying to provide the house and the clothes and the food and money that's going to be needed for college and all those things that we just run out of energy. And at the end of the day, when the kids are asking for us to talk to them and to play with them and to do things with them, and just leave me alone, I'm tired. Go watch the TV. Go play Nintendo. Go, I had a friend who put up a sign in his garage right where he would see it when he pulled into the garage every day after work that said, "Your most important job begins now," to remind him that, you know, it wasn't enough to work 8 hours, 10 hours, or however many hours, but that really the most important thing you could do for your kids is, you know, the time you're spending with them. Yeah, that's where the rubber really meets the road. And we talked about, we wouldn't have any patience for someone that would physically abuse or injure a child. But verbal abuse can be a lot more damaging, I think, has a lot longer lasting impact than physical blows. We looked at a couple passages from Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 17 and verse 22. It's just one of many that talk about the atmosphere in a home. Is it a pleasant place? Is it a place you want to be? Is it an encouraging place or is it a discouraging place? A joyful heart is good medicine, but a broken spirit dries up the bones. You know, are we giving our kids good medicine? Are we encouraging them? Are we being positive and focusing on strengths? Or is it just no, 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 no? don't. And we become that voice of the teacher on Charlie Brown. You know, you don't even know what it's saying, but it's just this negative, monotonous that nobody wants to listen to. Even when you say no, you can say it in a positive way. You can say no, or you can say later we can do that. You know, can I do this now? You can do it later. Well, it's the same as saying no, but it just sounds better. if you can think of a way to say negative things in a positive way, it just makes for a more pleasant, more encouraging. It's I think it's interesting in Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 4, one of the translations says, "Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger." I think another translation is, "Fathers, do not discourage your children." You know, And we have to be really careful, I think, as parents, that, I don't think I need to spend a lot of time with this group saying you need to provide physically for your kids, feed them and give them clothes and an education. You're going to do that. But I can't say enough about praising your kids. Even though, kids don't do things as well as adults do them. They don't do them as fast. They don't do them as competently. And a lot of times they're going to make mistakes and they're going to fail. But, an important thing as a parent is to recognize not just results, but to recognize effort. And so when they're trying, to praise that effort. That was a great try. You'll do better next time. Instead of, "Oh, you messed up again. Let me do that. Get out of my way. I can do it faster." Well, of course, you're an adult and they're a child. But unless you give them opportunities and encouragement, that's the way it's always going to be. Are you going to go to college with them? Are you going to go to school with them? So you've got to provide opportunity. You've got to provide encouragement. Again, there's time for criticism, but most children need cheerleaders more than they need critics. They need to be encouraged. There's going to be copies of this. Oh, I didn't even keep one. Dick, can you grab me one of those copies I gave my original? Oh, you got the, never mind, the originals here. There are copies of this in the back. You can get this later. I didn't pass it. But this is a poem. Many of you probably heard this. You know, if children live with criticism, they learn to condemn. If children live with hostility, they learn to fight. If children live with fear, they learn to be apprehensive. If children live with pity, they learn to feel sorry for themselves. If children live with ridicule, they learn to feel shy. If children live with jealousy, they learn to feel envy. If they live with shame, they learn to feel guilty. If children live with encouragement, they learn confidence. If children live with tolerance, they learn patience. If they live with praise, they learn appreciation. If children live with acceptance, they learn to love. If children live with approval, they learn to like themselves. If children live with recognition, they learn that it's good to have a goal. If children live with sharing, they learn generosity. If children live with honesty, they learn truthfulness. If children live with fairness, they learn justice. If children live with kindness and consideration, they learn respect. If children live with security, they learn to have faith in themselves and in those about them. If children live with friendliness, they learn the world is a nice place in which to live. And that's by Dorothy Law, Nolte. And I would add to that, you know, they learn that God is good. But the point is that if we think that to help our children we have to point out all their mistakes and continually remind them of where they can do better, that may not be the most helpful thing we can do for our children. Yeah, there are times when they need correction. But again, I want to emphasize how important encouragement is. And even when mistakes are made, to help them realize, there's a better way to do that, or maybe even better than that. It's just that you're going to get better and better at this. You know, you did better this time than last time, but you're going to do even better the next time. Instead of this could have been better, that could have been better, this isn't good enough. And so I think part of it has to do with our expectations as parents. You know, if our expectations are perfection, if that's the expectation, how realistic is that? What if that was God's expectation for us? Perfection? Is that really very realistic? If the expectation is excellence, yeah, now that's attainable. A 95 is excellent. It's not perfect, but it is excellent. And so, you know, can you receive recognition for excellence even though you have, you know, some failures or areas to improve? Well, sure. Stephen Covey was the first person I ever heard talk about this idea of an emotional bank account. But the idea that when you make negative comments, it's just like taking money out of the bank. Well, before you take money out, what do you have to do? Yeah, you've got to put it in. So before you start taking money out, you've got to put money in. So before you start correcting, you need to have put praise in. And a lot of the studies have shown for every negative comment, you probably need 10 positive comments. And so, again, if all we are to our children is a voice that is no, no, don't, then, you know, they stop listening. But if what they hear from us most of the time is praise and encouragement, well, when we do have to correct, well then, instead of just saying, well, they just don't like me, they don't care about me, it's, well, I know that they have my best interest at heart. And that makes, you know, that makes all the difference. Yes.
We who are parents and have gone through this before have learned that one of the first things a child learns to do is say why.
Oh, yeah.
Whether their question demands a yes or a no answer, it should be followed by an explanation.
Yeah, and one of the things that we're going to get to a little farther down the road, and will keep coming up again and again, is about age appropriateness. Because, you know, obviously what we say about a 2-year-old may be different than what we say about a 12-year-old. And so, you know, there'll be different needs and different responses, you know, depending on where they are. And, you know, sometimes, you know, a 2-year-old doesn't need to know why they have to brush their teeth, you know. A 6-year-old might need to know why. But some commands, it's good to offer an explanation. But, you know, sometimes you just need to do what you're told. And particularly in an emergency situation, there isn't time for explanations. You just need to know that if you hear a command, stop, that's not the time to say, well, why? Yes. Yeah.
And sometimes there are things involved. We try to tell our kids that sometimes they don't get to understand exactly everywhere we're coming from because there's things that they're not entitled to know. And I think it's a lesson that you teach them as they grow up that sometimes the answer, they hate the answer because I said so.
Right. Yeah.
That we need to look at sometimes. You know, God tells us sometimes things to do that we need to understand that we do it because He's the authority.
Exactly. Yeah. And we're going to spend a lot more time on that a little further down the road. But let me push forward through finishing up as we talk about needs very quickly and then go on to talk about teaching. But, you know, obviously as well as emotional needs, we want to be concerned about our children's spiritual needs. And, you know, the most important thing we can teach our children is to love God. And not just that there is a God or to know things about God, but to love God, to have a relationship with God. When the Bible talks about the importance of knowing God, it's not talking about knowing in the sense of knowing things about, but it's talking about the idea of knowing in the same sense that Adam and Eve knew each other, the idea that there's a relationship there. Not just, oh, I know you, I remember you. No, it's that there's a relationship there. That there's a trust, that we teach our children to trust God. And so, if you think about their spiritual needs, we help them experience the relationship with God. That in God's presence in Psalm chapter 16 and verse 11 is fullness of joy. And that apart from God, there really is no joy. But that joy is not about necessarily your outward physical circumstances, but it's about a relationship with God. And about, as we talk about it, spiritual needs, we talk about the importance of and relationship between freedom and responsibility. And as freedom increases, as, again, age-appropriate things come into their lives, responsibility is going to increase also. If a 5-year-old makes a mistake, they may lose their toy for a week. If a 17-year-old makes a mistake, they could end up in juvenile detention. There's going to be more responsibility as freedom grows. But growth, and growth is one of the most important things we can teach our children about as we think about their spiritual needs, is that, 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 2, have a volunteer to read that? 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 2. And someone else want to be turning to Hebrews chapter 5, verse 12 through 14. That expression, that you may grow into salvation. It's not just something that happens instantaneously, but it's a growth process. God chose to grow His children rather than simply to create them. Hebrews chapter 5, verses 12 through 14. Okay?
Solid food is for the mature. Those whose senses have been trained.
And so, again, this passage recognizes the fact that, there's a time to be an infant. There's a time to be inexperienced. You know, but you don't just continue in that state. You know, that's something God's intent, God's design is that we don't always stay spiritual babies. Just like we don't stay physical babies, we don't stay spiritual babies. We grow physically, we're to grow spiritually as well. And you know, when we get to talking about the parent's role, not only as a provider but as a teacher, we're going to emphasize that you can never start too early. Keep that filed in the back of your mind. We're going to get to that, come back to that hopefully in just a few minutes. But I will just say in conclusion, you might also think in terms of mental needs, particularly when you're talking about infants, young children. You know, the more stimulation, the more exposure, you know, bright colors, music, sounds. You know, as your children are growing up, again, this idea of you know, expose them to different things. My first teaching job was in a school district that was pretty poor. I was teaching at a junior high, and I was amazed how many teenagers who lived 50 miles from Houston had never been to a museum, never been to a library, had never seen a skyscraper. They'd never been to Houston. It was 50 miles away. When we took a field trip, you know, some of them in seventh graders, it was the first time they ever saw a skyscraper or the first time they ever went in a museum. Things like books in your house, musical instruments, those are all have to do with mental needs, and kids have mental needs. Teaching, education, whether you pay taxes to provide them with a public education, whether you send them to a private school, whether you homeschool. You know, the Jewish commentators on the Proverbs, you know, talked about how that if a parent didn't teach their child a trade, they were teaching them to be a criminal. You know, that it's a parent's obligation to teach a child to be able to work to support themselves and others. And that if you don't do that as a parent, you know, you're neglecting a responsibility. I think it's helpful to, as we think about providers, a verse that might help is to sum this up is Luke chapter 2 and verse 52. Can I volunteer to read that? Luke chapter 2 and verse 52. Notice in this passage it talks about wisdom, stature, favor with God, favor with man. You know, wisdom refers to these mental needs, stature, physical needs, favor with God, spiritual needs, favor with man, social needs, emotional needs, all of those things. And Jesus grew in all of those areas. And our children need to grow in all of those areas. And it's important that we see ourselves not just as, you know, the breadwinner. You know, if all we do is give them food and clothing, we're really shortchanging them. You know, they have spiritual needs, physical needs, emotional needs that we need to provide as well. I'm going to move on to this idea of teacher. A lot of these needs are met in our role as a parent, as a teacher. And realize that you're your child's first teacher. Think about that. Before they ever go to a school, before they ever go to a Bible class, they're going to be learning from you. For one thing, they're watching you. They see how you react to stressful situations. They hear the language that you use, the tone of voice that you use. They see how you treat people. They see whether you... Well, they see everything. But it's not just what children observe in us. Notice that as we think about our role as a teacher, that it's also something that's to be intentional. In Deuteronomy chapter 6, verses 4 through 6, we see a passage that... was a central part of the Jewish scriptures. In fact, I was reading something that they had a name for this passage. The Jews called it the Shema, which means listen. And as I understand it, it was something that in most homes it was read first thing every morning and last thing every day. In fact, it says the word shama pronounced is mentioned early. Literally, it means to listen or hear in the Hebrew language. Each day in Orthodox Jewish homes, usually in the morning and the evening, the shama is recited. It's used as a morning blessing and a bedtime prayer and in special dedications such as home blessings. Traditionally, the shama was quoted every Sabbath and the congregation would stand to recite these most holy words. Even today, the shama is recited at the deathbed and is a part of the major feast and celebrations of the Jewish people. Listen to this statement. It says, the shama is so important that most Bible scholars say it was likely the first scripture Jesus learned as a child. Before he could speak, walk, or read, he no doubt heard it every day. In fact, when Jesus was later asked what was the most important commandment without hesitation, this is the verse he quoted. Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. These words which I am commanding you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your sons and shall talk of them when you sit in your house and when you walk by the way and when you lie down and when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand. They shall be as frontlets on your forehead. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. What's this passage say? Yeah, it's to permeate our homes. It's not just at school. It's not just at Sunday school. But this is a part of our home. It's when you get up in the morning. It's when you go to bed at night. It's when you sit down to eat. It's when you're traveling. It's not just something you tattoo on your hand. But it's the idea that your hands are guided by what this book says. You go where this book says, Aaron. Right.
One of the first things I taught my children was, children obey your parents in the Lord.
Right.
They're obeying me not because they're obeying me. They do have to obey me. It's not just that. It's that when they obey me, they are obeying God.
Yeah.
My authority comes from God.
Yeah. Our children are accountable to us because we're accountable to our Father. We have authority, but it's derived. It's, and we see this, and we're not going to read these other passages. Chuck just preached on Proverbs chapter 4. You can look at 1 Thessalonians chapter 2. Look at those passages that talk about. But I don't know. I would guess that there's at least 100 passages that talk about our responsibility to teach. You look through the Proverbs again and again. It talks about instruct, hear, teach. Listen. The words may, different words may be used, but the thought is emphasized again and again and again. But this idea that to teach, and not just teach our children, but to teach diligently. It's not just we'll fit it in somewhere, or with whatever time's left over after their other studies, then we'll the priority. The most important thing we can teach our children is that God is one and that we're to serve Him with our heart, soul, our might. And again, this is... I may have these slides a little bit out of order. This is something that's 24/7. It's not just at Bible class. It's not just when they start school at 4 or 5 years of age, but this is something from the time they're infants. It's again this idea of teachable moments. You don't have to be in a class to learn. In fact, one of the best times to learn is when you're doing something and the question is raised. When the question's raised, they're wanting to learn. Who made this? God made this. Beverly?
Well,
Right. It does. And again, when we think about providing, it's not just a matter of what they want, it's what they need. And a lot of times what they need is very different from what they want. So, but our job as providers, not to give them what they want, it's to give them what they need. You know, they may want candy bars for breakfast, but that's not what they need. You know, they may want, something every time they go through the checkout line at the store. They may want something every time they go to the store, but that's not what they need. And so, and we're going to say some more about that, but let me emphasize on at this point this idea about it's never too early to start. That exposure, even if they don't understand, in the beginning God created the heaven and the earth. The more they hear that, the more that becomes a part of who they are. Maxine? Right. Right. That's an important part of it. On this idea of not starting too soon, I just want to say, don't underestimate children. It's amazing what they can learn. This hit home to me when my daughter was a four-year-old. She wasn't our first child, but our four-year-old, my first child got to go to pre-K free. Because it was just the school district we were in had open enrollment. Anybody who wanted to come, sign them up, they could go. But between my first child's birthday, fourth birthday, and my second child's fourth birthday, their policies changed. It became a thing where, you know, if you make below a certain amount of money, your kids can come. But otherwise, you know, we don't have room for everybody, so we're going to serve the people who need it the most. And, you know, there's some reason for that. If, you know, kids don't even know English, well, yeah, they're going to need some instruction before that first day of kindergarten or first grade. But anyways, we had been telling our daughter, well, when you turn four, you'll get to go to school just like your brother. Well, the rules have changed. But we made a promise. So, okay, well, we have to find a place to let her go, and even if we have to pay for it. And so we found a little place. It was a religious group there in town that had a school. But they were teaching secular things. But it was interesting. They didn't have some of the restrictions that the public school has. And so she brought something home the first week. We're going to be working on our ABCs. Well, that's great. Yeah. And so it's called the ABC Bible verses. Instead of A is for apple and B is for ball and C is for cat, A is all have sinned and come short of the glory of God, Romans 3:23. B, believe on the Lord Jesus Christ and be saved, Acts 16:31. C, anybody want to take a guess? Close. Think about children. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. And it's like, oh, wow. And, you know, the amazing thing was they were learning one of these a week. But not only did she learn them, not only did a four-year-old memorize 26, everybody in the house knew these verses. Because we'd be saying, you know, instead of just A is apple, A is all sin and fall short. Everybody makes mistakes. See, children, obey your parents in the Lord.
Dick? Yeah, those seats are on the table in the corner.
If you want to pick one of these up on your way, this is something not only can you work on with your kids and grandchildren, but it'd be good for you too. But it's amazing that talk about subliminal advertising. I mean, I can't think of the letter A without thinking, all have sinned and come short of the glory of God, because we said that so many times. It's one thing to drive down the road and say, look for something that starts with A or look for something that starts with B, but, you know, to associate every letter of the alphabet with, anyway, that's, it's don't underestimate them. They can learn a lot more than you think, and they can learn a lot sooner than you think. And even if they don't fully comprehend Romans 3, verse 23, at 4 years of age or 3 years of age, you've exposed them. You've exposed them. And the fact of the matter is, if you're 18 or 28 or 58, you probably still haven't fully comprehended those verses, and you're still going to be learning more. So just because you don't know everything about the verse, does that mean, oh, I have to wait until I can understand it all before I start? Of course not. Z, Zion heard and was glad. Psalm 97, verse 8. T was today is the day that the Lord has made. That was a different. Actually, I don't think this was the one my daughter had. I was looking for the one my daughter had. I've got it in a file somewhere. I kept it, but I couldn't find it, so I just downloaded it.